Hi, I'm Jen Sherlock, and welcome to my lifestyle podcast, Live Without a Net. The podcast showcases people who live fearlessly and have the ambition to create something. I'll showcase change makers who have decided to let go of their safety net in order to survive. So let's jump right in. Hi, I'm Jen Sherlock. Welcome to Live Without a Net. I'm with Bob Clements. He's a partner at FRS Advisors in Wayne, Pennsylvania. Welcome to the show.
Hey, Jen, thanks. I appreciate you having me on.
Of course. This is a topic that many people will be interested in, and I know I was, and I wish I learned when I was in college. Finance was never my specialty or math in general. So I'd love to just like kick it off and right off the top on how can people learn how to save and more about finances?
That's a good question. And I think it starts in the household when you're younger. Done a lot of seminars and spoke to some people before on the basics of financial planning. Companies would bring me in to speak to their employees. And as a firm, we do a lot of employee education. And unfortunately, what tends to happen is people start to get focused in on their finances in their mid-20s, maybe even their 30s. When they've already established some of the habits that they have. And a lot of those habits came from how they were raised. I always feel that the type of household that you're raised in is what your relationship with money is going to look like. You know, if you had grew up in a house where people were not that great with money, or your parents spent too much, weren't good savers, it's probably more than likely going to be the way that you handle money. If you had someone that was very frugal or good at saving, and was a great planner, then there's a good chance that that was your planning or your style with money. All that said, it's not something that you can't break. You can break these habits. It's just going to take a little bit of work and a little bit of education. Unfortunately, when a lot of us were growing up, they didn't start to teach economics and finance in high school, but I know they are doing a little bit more of that now. And even if you don't major in any of that in college, I do think it's important to take some kind of business classes or basic economic classes as well. But I also think right now with younger people, when they're starting to build their career and starting to establish their financial plan, a lot of times I think they maybe just get a little too overcomplicated with things. And the basics are, if you're in your early to mid-20s, just start saving money. Don't worry about where you're putting it. Put it in the S&P 500, you know, open up an account at Schwab or anywhere if you don't want to work with a financial planner, and just start saving $100, $200, $300 a month into an investment account and just try not to touch it. Every year, try to increase that amount as much as you possibly can. Take advantage of your 401k if you're an employer. Use Roth IRAs if you're eligible. But just try to take advantage of starting as soon as you possibly can and building that savings muscle, because ultimately that's what it is. It's no different than, you know, starting to work out. It takes time to get out of that habit. It takes time to build muscles. That's the same thing when it comes to your finances. It takes a long time to build that habit of, I'm going to start to save consistently. Still go out and have fun. I was in my 20s. I did, you know, all the fun things that everyone else did, maybe even more. I did start to build a savings plan fairly early on, and it came in handy for multiple reasons. Some of it I had to tap into when I started a business, some of it I used to buy a house, and some of it's still there today. But, I had that habit started pretty early, ingrained in me from, you know, my mom growing up.
Oh, that's awesome. That's one thing I didn't have, but I wish I did. So do you recommend people doing it every paycheck then? Is that how you learned, or did you learn just, you know, certain times of the year you put a certain amount aside?
I think two ways. I think the moment a paycheck hits your bank account, you should have some kind of an automatic withdrawal set up out of your bank account into an investment account. Get it out of sight and out of mind as quickly as you can, or you spend it. Start a little bit smaller than you think. You know, some people go in, I'm only going to do $1,000 a month. And within a month or two, they're like, I'm overextended already and I have to decrease that amount. That's just not a good positive, mental savings plan. I'd rather see someone start at $200 a month and then go 3 months and say, I don't even notice this isn't in my bank account anymore. I'm going to make it $400 a month and review that. The other thing would be, as your bank account builds and you have extra cash flow or extra savings, say, all right, I'm now going to take, you know, a couple thousand dollars out of that and put it away towards my investment plan, or put it into my Roth IRA before April 15th tax filing date. But again, the main thing is just don't overcomplicate things and just start. I recommend working with a financial planner, obviously, because I am one. I do see the benefits of it. For younger people, it's almost more of an accountability partner and a psychologist than I'm bringing, you know, state-of-the-art ideas to the table. For someone who's just getting started, it's more just holding you accountable and keeping you disciplined and focused on what's going to benefit you when you're, you know, 60, 65 years old. And if I showed you some of the statistics on starting at 25 versus starting at 35, you know, basically to get to the same place at 65, if you were to do, you know, I'm ballparking these numbers, but if you were to put away $200 a month starting at 25, you would have the same amount at 65 as if I started at 35. It would take me about $1,000 a month to hit that same number. That's just the value of starting early and compounding interest. So I'm not saying don't start at 35 if you haven't, but the sooner that, absolute better.
And now with life expectancy lasting till, like, I've seen some studies like 110. I don't know if I want that to be true, but if it is true, longevity, what does that mean for savings and retirement and inflation?
Well, I mean, as far as savings and retirement, with life expectancy continues to go up, all it means is that you're going to have to either work longer or make your money last longer. You know, it's funny because when Social Security first started, the age was 62 years old where you would start taking it. And I think at the time, life expectancy was like 65 years old. So Social Security was never designed to be this benefit that you started taking at 62 and it was your source of retirement income until you were 90. So that's why you've seen it continue to get pushed back, you know, 65, 66, 67. They've given you incentives to waiting longer to take your Social Security because they're paying it out for a much longer period of time. Also, as a human, I don't believe it's in anyone's best interest to fully retire at 60, 65 years old and then be stagnant or dormant for the next 20, 30 years. It's not good for the brain. It's not good for the body. Certainly isn't good for the wallet. And very few people are able to get to a point at 65 where they can sustain their lifestyle needs for 30 years. So I think that's where I think it's important to work with a financial planner to say, what age can I retire off of X amount of dollars? And how long will that last me? If I think my life expectancy, we'll do worst case scenario models for people, or best case scenario, I guess depends how you look at it. If you live to 100, here's how much money you'll be able to generate off of what you've saved starting at age 65, or how much, you know, what that maximum amount of income will look like. Or you tell me you want $150,000 a year to retire off of at 65. Well, let's look at those numbers. And what it shows is that you're going to run out of money at 75. So that means you either have to lower your expectations for your income needs or work a little bit longer, or a combination of both. That's where it's important to really work on having a good plan, a plan that's flexible, and that you review it, you know, pretty regularly. And by regular, I mean every 6 months, every 12 months, just to update your plan because life changes.
Yeah, that's a great tip. What about cryptocurrency? I know when I had a few clients before COVID that were in that space, Wall Street or people in finance didn't think that it would ever last and they thought it was a joke. But now that they've kind of had to accept it. So where is a firm like yours with cryptocurrency and recommendations there?
We stay away from direct investing for clients in cryptocurrencies because our broker dealer does limit what we can do in the crypto space. That said, we had a seminar handful of years ago by someone who works closely in crypto as a hedge fund manager. And his feedback on crypto was, look, it's here to stay. It's just a matter of what your expectations are from it and how exposed you get to it. What happened a couple of years ago was, you know, it was quick, easy money for a lot of people, or so it seemed to be quick, easy money for a lot of people. So they went all in. And then it, you know, dipped down pretty hard with a major pullback, and a lot of people lost their money. or they were invested using certain apps that went under and they couldn't get their money out. It's still kind of an unknown in the Wild West, but if someone's going to dabble in crypto, same as I say with any other speculative investment, go into it with a piece with an amount of money that you're comfortable playing with. And if it went to zero, it's not going to keep you up at night. I don't ever recommend putting all your eggs in one basket or overexposing yourself to any stock, speculative investment, whatever it may be, piece of real estate. All of them have a place in a balanced portfolio, but it's important to stay diversified and not overexposed to any one area.
Interesting. So is this something that your firm has seminars on, like, or is it something that your firm wants to have seminars on in terms of like everything we've spoken about thus far? You had mentioned earlier you do like educational seminars. Is that for anyone or is that just for like people in your space?
Well, typically we have a lot of 401k plans and 403b plans as a firm. And we'll go in and do meetings with the participants inside those plans and just educate them on what they're doing inside their 401k or 403b. And then just give them kind of a general topic on financial planning. Excuse me. So we don't do as much individual consultation. If someone wants to hire us for a seminar, we'd be happy to do it. We do individual events where we'll bring clients to them, try to make it a little bit of fun where we might do a whiskey and wine tasting coupled with some kind of a financial topic. We'll typically try to use a topic that's hot on people's mind. And a couple of years ago when we did it, it was crypto. This year, we're looking at maybe doing something on the election and the stock market and the election and the economy without getting, political, but just answering questions on what it really means to the stock market and the economy during election years and post-election years, because you know as well as I do, that's all anybody's going to hear really from now till the end of the year is about the election and how things are going to play out and what it's going to mean for their money.
Are you getting a lot of questions on that by your clients?
Yeah, I mean, it comes up in just about every meeting. You know, what's going to happen over leading up to the election? Do we need to make any changes to the portfolio? What's going to happen if, one side wins versus the other? How's that going to impact their portfolio? So yeah, it's always the case. I think maybe the last 10, 15 years, politics has probably become more topical than it was in the past, or at least talked about more. So it's definitely on the top of a lot of people's brains right now, for sure.
Absolutely. And it's not that far away. I think it's under six
Correct.
Months now.
Yeah.
We'll
be here before you know it.
Scary times.
Yes.
So now I want to talk about your entrepreneurship history and how you started. Were you always interested in having your own company?
Yeah, I was always interested in working for myself at some capacity, whether that meant I was in a sales role for a bigger organization, but I had autonomy, or just working completely on my own. Truth be told, I'm not the most employable person on the planet. I tend to be a little stubborn, maybe a little bit of a know-it-all. I always think I can do it a little bit better than everyone else. So I always felt that being on my own was the easiest way to run my own, professional career. I hold myself very accountable. So I was never someone who was going to blame anybody else for my failures. And I certainly don't want to give away a ton of credit for any of my successes. I try to, sink or swim based off of my own, my own knowledge and my risk taking. And the other thing is I approach things a little bit differently than an employer might. And I don't really want to have to get permission to take risk or to pull back from risk to expand. I think I know what's best for me, my business, my family. And I felt being a business owner, an entrepreneur was the best way to ensure that I could make that happen. But it was a long road, and there were some highs and lows, and it was all a learning experience. I think as an adult post-college, I think I was employed for maybe 3 months of my life post-college. And that was really while I was trying to get my footing into what I wanted to do. And then, since then I've, really worked on my own at one way or another, or had my own business in one way or another.
So you're the epitome of live without a net. You've done it yourself.
Correct. It's all sink or swim. And I've taken a lot of risks. I've been very fortunate. I've had a phenomenal support system behind me, personally and professionally. family, friends, and most recently clients that have been incredible. You know, I, as a financial planner, financial advisor, I don't have assets. You know, I have clients that own materials, buildings, equipment that has a tangible value. You know, my assets are my clients, and they're, other than, you know, obviously my family, they're the most important things to me. They trust me with what's some of the most important things to them, other than their family and their, you know, career is their money. And they put significant amount of trust in me. They've allowed me to switch companies or start my own company and came along for the ride with me. So I'm incredibly indebted to them for that. And I don't take lightly the trust they put into me. And so they are, you know, my asset, and I protect that. And that's been a great support system. And then also my family has been extremely supportive in helping me take the risks that I have taken to build this. And I wouldn't have been able to get where I am today in a fairly quick, shorter time over the last 10 years without the help of, you know, family.
Of course, family first.
Mm-hmm, always.
Where do you see yourself in the next 5 years?
We're in full growth mode. You know, as a firm and as an individual, I really want to expand this pretty quickly. I feel like at my age, I'm in the sweet spot for growth. You know, I'm 47. I'm not too old where I don't have energy. I'm not too young where I don't have the experience and people unwilling to trust me. So, you know, I definitely want to look to expand our business, whether it's through acquisitions or just organically through additional clients. Marketing events, networking, PR. But we definitely are looking to continue to grow our business. And I wouldn't even mind expanding nationally, you know, trying to get some offices or buy practices in areas in other geographies. You know, I have a lot of clients that are starting to consider moving as they get older to warmer climates. And I'd like to have a presence in those areas. You know, the world's changed a lot with the virtual meetings, but I'd still like to have boots on the ground in certain geographies in the country. And selfishly, I'm not a big fan of the winter. So I would enjoy having some warmth, you know, and business at the same time.
So obviously Florida's one. What are the others? Is it Texas, Arizona?
I haven't had any clients moving into those areas. Florida, South Carolina would be more. I know Georgia is getting a little bit more popular now, parts of Georgia. Primarily Florida, though. I have a handful of clients already down there, but the Carolinas are pretty popular as well. Not many of my clients are moving to Texas. I think a lot of them, you know, still have family here and they want to be, that Florida flight's pretty easy from the Philadelphia region.
Yes. I know, you and me both. Mm-hmm. They're an office down there.
Yeah. It's a goal.
Yes, exactly. Are there any like quick tips for people or like financial hacks or anything that many people may not know about, whether it's for savings or whether it's for their taxes or whether it's, I don't know, maybe there's like a quick way to make money that no one knows about?
Sadly, there is no quick way to make money. You know, it's the number one thing a lot of my clients used to say, and now they kind of know it as a running joke, is how do I make this most, as much money as possible without taking risk? I want maximum returns, minimum risk. And I said, well, you know, we kind of all do. It doesn't really exist. You know, the higher the reward, typically the higher the risk. So it's, you know, the best advice I can give people is have a plan, have a threshold for what your risk you're willing to take, and then just get out of your own way. Put money away, buy quality investments. Again, whether it's stocks, bonds, real estate, alternative investments, buy the best quality of those you possibly can, and then just get out of your way and don't let emotion dictate your investment philosophy. The market's going to go up and it's going to go down. That's a guarantee. A guarantee is a word we're not really allowed to use, but I'm comfortable using that the market's going to go up and down. I can guarantee you that. Tried and true is that in the long run, owning good quality investments has always made you money. And realistically, in the future, there's a good chance it will continue to make you money. Just stay out of your way. Don't sell when you're fearful. And don't get greedy when things seem too good to be true. That's where people tend to get hurt. Just be consistent.
Is real estate still a good investment?
Yeah. I mean, I think depending on the real estate, it's expensive in certain areas. Interest rates are pretty high right now. But, you know, if you're looking to buy and flip it right away, you know, there's a little bit more research that probably needs to be done on that. It certainly isn't my expertise. But I think that if you're looking at doing, you know, a buy and hold philosophy with real estate or owning it for the long run as an investment, yeah, I think that's a great opportunity. Just have to make sure you trade within your means and invest within your means. But just like anything else, it's have a plan, make sure you're doing the right things and, you know, invest appropriately and don't overextend yourself. But I have a lot of clients who've done excellent in real estate and some of them swear by it. But, you know, make sure you're doing it in the right geography.
And in terms of wealth managers, I've met, you know, quite a few over the years. What makes for a good wealth manager? Because how do you differentiate yourself and make yourself unique when, you know, you're out networking or you just meet someone that you would love to do their finances? So what do you think makes you likable?
Likable. I don't know how many people think I'm likable, but it's a different question about what makes me likable versus what makes me a good wealth manager. You know, I think what makes me, why people I think will enjoy doing business with me and stay with me is that I speak their language. You know, I don't try to act like the smartest person in the room because I know I'm typically not going to be the smartest person in the room. So I speak about investments and financial planning at a normal level. I'm not trying to confuse anybody. I'm extremely transparent. I don't believe in hiding anything, fees, you know, investments. There's no tricks or gimmicks to what we're doing. And most importantly, service and listening. You know, it's everybody wants to be heard. I recognize that if you're turning over your life savings and asking me to help you manage that money, that comes with a huge responsibility. And that responsibility can be as simple as when you're upset or scared that I listen to you and I give you my professional advice and try to tell you what I would do if I were you. And that if you call me, I get back to you within 24 hours. That's a pledge that I have for my clients that I will respond to them within 24 hours. Doesn't mean I have an answer to a question within 24 hours. But I will at least let them know that I've received their question and I'm going to work on it and I'll get back to them as soon as I have an answer. But I don't ever want anybody to feel like I'm not listening or I'm not responsive to them. And, you know, I have some clients that have been with me since I started in this business and I had $3 million of assets under management and they made up a big piece of that $3 million. And now I've grown that quite a bit. They've grown with me. So they've been loyal to me and I'm loyal to them. And I have some smaller clients that, you know, it's still a huge chunk of their life savings. They want to be heard too. So I try to treat everybody equally and just be as responsive, transparent, and down to earth with them as possible. Nobody needs to be confused with, you know, high level finance speak.
And after COVID, are you meeting more on Zoom or still in person?
You were still probably more towards 60-40 to the Zoom side. A lot of my clients have preferred that. It's, you know, efficient for them. You know, typically a lot of times they'll either come to me or I'll go to them if they're a business owner. And, you know, they want to get back to business without me being in their office for an hour and a half. And they feel like we can get a lot done in a 30-45 minute Zoom session. I miss the face-to-face. New clients, I prefer to meet face-to-face right off the bat. I think it's hard to establish a relationship and a rapport with somebody initially over a computer. But once the relationship's established, if that's what their comfort zone is, then sure, we can operate on through a virtual meeting. But I do miss the in-person interactions for a lot of reasons. I mean, I generally enjoy my clients. I consider them friends. I like socializing with them. So I do miss some of the face-to-face, but we'll find ways to do that, you know, get out golfing or go out to dinner or lunch or meet for a drink every now and then if they're open to it. But, you know, it is, everybody's lives are busier and busier.
No, absolutely. But that is a part of the job, just networking, keeping the relationship going.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
For the future of your business. Yeah, that's amazing. And how can people find out about you?
So I have a great PR team that, so I'm out there on LinkedIn, FRS Wealth Management, Robert Clements is on LinkedIn. We have a Facebook FRS Wealth Management page on Facebook as well. We have our website, frsadvisors.com. So we're out there. You reach out at any time. I love meeting new people and trying to help people. And if I'm not the right fit, I'll tell you I'm not the right fit. I can always point you in the right direction, but we have a nice team of individuals inside the company that specialize in a few different areas. So if I don't offer what you're looking for, there's a really good chance that someone inside my office does have that expertise that you're searching for.
Yeah, you're a great educator. I've learned a lot by working with you, and also your quotes are truly like hard hitting, I think, with explaining the difficulties. Like, I didn't understand anything about CDs until you wrote something. There's a lot of things I don't understand. So I would consider myself like an average person that doesn't understand everything that you know. Sure. So it's been educational for myself as well. But hopefully.
Well, finance becomes such an enormous, revenue stream for networks, TV stations, print media, online media. It's huge. And so there's a lot, everybody's hit over the head right now with so many different resources of information, and it's confusing for people. So I enjoy that you've gotten me into writing some articles here and there, and I hope to be able to bring it down to a level where people who aren't, who don't have the highest financial acumen can at least relate to it and start to, make the right steps to build a financial plan. I do enjoy that.
Yeah, you make it very relatable. Are the news links on your website yet in the news?
Yeah, I think I believe that's in process now. We're still building out our website. We're not building it. We have a good website, but we're still trying to build different aspects to it. But all the articles are on my LinkedIn page as well, and they're easy to find there.
Okay, perfect. Mm-hmm. Thank you so much.
It's been fun. Thank you, Jen.
And thanks for being on my podcast.
Thanks for having me. Take care.
You too.
Bye.
Well, that's it for now. Thanks everyone for joining us. Please reach out to me so I can feature you on my show. I do respond to everyone. You can find me on my Instagram at Jennifer Sherlock or my business Instagram at JennaCom. And check out our new website coming soon, livewithoutanet.com. Thanks again, and I look forward to taking risks with you.